Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Albert, for calling in. I'm going to do a brief intro, and Don and Ben should be joining us as well. So last week, Albert wasn't here, but we talked a little bit about Don had gone to a tri-state convention for the NAACP in Utah, and we were talking about the Mormon philosophy on black people. From the mid-1800s until 1978, the Church of Latter-day Saints had a policy which prevented most men of black African descent from being ordained to the church priesthood. Black members were also not permitted to participate in most temple ordinances. And also Brigham Young, Joseph Smith's successor, taught that black suffrage, I think that means voting rights, went against church doctrine, that God had taken away the rights for blacks to hold public office and that God would curse whites who married black. So in other words, they wouldn't let them be in the priesthood. They were against mixed marriages and they were barred from temple ordinances. Well, I want to read one interesting thing just to recap last week, because we also are going to be talking, we're also talking about how California, Oregon, and Washington want to join an international organization for environmental protection that Donald Trump has already rejected. And Ben had a few other things he wanted to bring up tonight. Hopefully he'll call in. Anyways, Don, it's too bad Don's not on the line yet, but I'm going to read this doctrine. The Book of Mormon describes a series of conflicts between the light-skinned Nephites and the dark-skinned Lamanites in the Book of Mormon. God inflicts a curse of dark skin on the Lamites when they disobey him, and then they become white and delightsome when they obey him. In other words, there's this pre-existing condition that I'm going to read about Cain and Abel. In the Bible, when Cain disobeyed God and killed Abel, God put a mark on Cain, and the Mormons interpreted this to be that the mark that was put on Cain was dark skin. And then in another biblical account, Ham discovered his father Noah drunk and naked in the tent. This is actually in the Bible, by the way. Because of this, Noah cursed Ham's son, Canaan, to be the servant of servants. Although the scriptures do not mention Ham's skin color, a common Judeo-Christian interpretation predating Mormonism these verses to justify slavery. In other words, some Christian organizations believe that the image of dark skin was a curse by God over one of Noah's three sons. He had three sons, Shem, Japheth, and Ham. And my son's ancestors, his aunt Lawida traced her ancestry back to the sons of Noah that migrated from the Middle East. And they believe that they're part of one of the original tribes. The problem is a lot of religions claim that lost tribe of Israel. For example, the Lamanites that I was just mentioning, there's a tribe in the South African part of the continent, not in South Africa, but a few countries north. The Lamanites that they were carrying Jewish traditions from the past and religion, had Jewish practices like the way they killed animals and their customs. So I believe that to be the true Lamanites, not a lost Native American tribe in America that Joseph Smith equated it with. I'm just going to read one more sentence, and then I'm going to pull Albert in. One of the justifications that the LDS Church used for discriminatory policy was that black individuals' pre-existing spirits were not as virtuous as white pre-existing spirits. This justification appeared as early as 1908 in the Liahona magazine. In the letter in 1947, the first presidency, I think it's the first Mormon presidency, wrote in a letter to Lowry Nelson that blacks were not entitled to the full blessings of the gospel and referenced the revelations on the pre-existence as a justification. In 1952, Lowry published a critique of what he termed the racist policy in the Article of the Nation. Lowry believes it was the first time the folk doctrine that blacks were less righteous in the pre-existence was publicized to the non-Mormon world. Well, eventually, I'm not going to go into the whole history, but eventually the Mormon church in the late 70s lifted the ban and blacks were fully immersed into the membership. Let's face it, they were discriminated against. With that, I'm going to pull Albert in. Good evening, Albert. How's it going?
Just surviving.
How's your school going and your week going?
It is going fine. I applied to apparently get the smog license. But it's a couple-step process, so I had to get some classes and pass the classes and test in the class, and now I have to apply for the state test.
The smog license is important in that state. It's a very necessary requirement for air safety.
Yeah, exactly. So I passed the classes, but now I have to study for the state test. It's just some stuff to keep me busy over the weeks to study on, So I'm going to be studying on that before I take the test, the state test, which should be my final test.
I had a friend in the Valley who had his own smog shop. One of his relatives gave him the money to pony it up, and he had his own smog shop for a while.
Well, yeah,
so,
if you're working,
hopefully,
if you're only working on cars 2000 and up, all you really need is the computer, like a laptop with a, you know, the scanner connector, they call it the DAD, that connects to the car, you know what I mean? And that's all, you know, that's all you really need. And the printer, you want to be able to print the, you know, the paper out, but that's all you really need, you know, if you're working on 2000 and up in California. Otherwise, if you're working like on a 99 or a 98 or something like that, you have to run on a dyno in high and density areas. Only in high if you don't live in a high and density area, then you don't really have to run your car on a dyno. You could just do a 2-speed idle test on the older machines. That all varies.
Sounds interesting. I just wanted to give you some headway on what we talked about last week. Well, we spent a lot of time. It was a 2-hour show. It was Don, Ben, and me. So I remember we talked. I'm going to bring up the show description because I kind of forgot everything. I guess I remember now. Ben was kind of prodding Don on. We were talking about theological doctrine, like. Ben was trying to say stuff like some people view, we were talking about Mormons because Don had visited Utah, and Ben was talking from a kind of an agnostic point of view, like non-Christian, not anything, saying that we were talking about cults and how some people believe, like I'm a traditional religion, Lutheran, but some people view the Mormons as a cult because Joseph Smith had these gold plates and he added on to the doctrine of the Bible. So Don was trying to talk about all these belief systems, and then we were talking more about other stuff too. But anyways,
well,
it was an interesting show.
Isn't Don like believe in God, like Christian or Catholic or something like that, and believes in God?
Yeah, Don's wife is a Catholic, but see, the reason I just read all that, the stuff that I just read on the blackness of the... I was reading about the Mormonism and how they discriminated against blacks until 1978, because in the mid-1800s.
The reason why I'm asking is Don is, you know, that religious, you know, and other people, they also, you know, talk about other religions. See, if you believe in a certain religion, that makes you automatically biased towards any other religion. You know what I mean? If you believe in voodoo...
You just said it. That's exactly what Ben was trying to say last week. Like, who's to call Mormonism a cult versus Lutheran, Christian, or Baptist, or Methodist? Like, the bias is that you accept your own church doctrine, and that's right in your mind. But if I start questioning Judaism or Islam, then I become kind of a subjective person too.
That's why I'm basically what you call atheist. I don't believe in any religions, which makes me unbiased to all religions.
Because on the show before that you're kind of a Heinz 57, like you kind of scrutinize all the religious doctrines. And you don't really buy into any of it, but you entertain all the ideas just to see what they're all like.
Yeah, I'm open-minded. I'm open-minded to any religion, but that just because I'm based on any religion, I'm basically atheist. You know, I don't apply myself to any religion. That makes me unbiased to all religions that are out there. So that's a good thing, you know, in a way, because...
There's only
two questions.
There would be two... Don, I do see you on the line, and I'll pull you in a minute. There are two questions I have for you, though, being that I've been a Christian for 53 years. My first question is, have you ever had a religious experience, even if it didn't involve Jesus? And secondly, have you ever had the need to submit yourself to a higher power?
No and no. Really, no. I mean, when I was young, my mom took me to church. And, you know, I guess I kind of like, got into it, but then I didn't. I was like, not really into it because I was kind of being forced to come over because my mom forced me to go. So it wasn't by choice. So, you know, but after I grew up,
How about a struggle? Have you ever had a friend die suddenly or lost a girlfriend or one of your relatives died and then you had like this big overhaul in your mind, like, why am I on earth? What is my purpose? What is my ultimate plan? Am I going to live past earth? Like, have you ever had that type of experience?
Well, you know, when you're desperate, you're willing to pray to any God. You're willing to do anything when you're desperate. And, you know, when you're desperate and, you know, somebody's dying and, you know, you don't want that to happen, you go through all your phases and everything they could possibly do. You know, I mean, not just physically, like you go to every doctor and you try everything, but also mentally, like you just pray to every God. You just wish anything, you know, even though you don't believe in God, you just go for it anyways, because anything is worth a try.
Well, do
you
think people just do that when they're desperate, or how about like real truth seekers, someone who is really trying to search for the truth? For example, I was watching Joseph Smith's documentary tonight, and he questioned certain Bible verses and he questioned church practices. And the reason he created his own church is because he didn't accept all the things that he read and saw in the local churches.
Well, I like to finish with the part where I mentioned when you're desperate, you do all those things. Now, because you're desperate, that kind of way, and in a way, you're kind of forcing yourself. You're kind of like basically forced to pray to any God and try anything, you know. It's kind of a forced thing, you know. You're not really, you're not doing it on your own will. Basically, you're not doing it on your own free choice and will, you know what I mean? When you're doing truly something on your own truly free will, you must do it without being desperate, without having any major issues. You know, a lot of people, they say they find God is when they're at their worst. They're, you know, they're homeless, they're everything, you know, they're at rock bottom, and they find God, and they pull through the struggle, and they slowly climb up, whatever the story is. But it seems like all the cases, when they're down on the bottom, they find God, you know? And that's kind of like I was talking about, being desperate and kind of forcing yourself, and kind of feel like you're forced to do it. And, you know,
you think only people, bottom feeders for God? You don't think someone with a sharp mind and a curious mind who is emotionally and financially secure can find God?
Well, you know, I mean, everybody's gone to some kind of point of what they consider rock bottom and then climbed up somehow. And, you know, when they're top, they're thankful they have all what they have and they think for what they have. You know what I mean? Here's the thing, because, I mean, when you're a religion, you know, I mean, if you're truly, let's just say truly believe in God, right? Or let's just say, how do I put it? Okay, if you truly have free will, complete free will of your own choice, and you're choosing what religion you really want to be in, you know what I mean? And like they say in the religion of most religions, you know, they kind of have a way to kind of get you in. Like believing in God is if you're a bad person, you go to hell. If you're a good person, you go to heaven. And, you know, that's kind of
the definition of good and bad is obedience to God. So even if you, I'm going to pull Don in 5 seconds, he's been on hold 9 minutes. Even if you, let's just say you join a religion, that doesn't make you good, because you're still subject to sin. Everybody's a sinner, whether they're in a church or not. The only difference between, I don't believe in good and bad people. I believe in repenting people who are sorry for their sins and people who are not even in the circumference or in the awareness that they're sinning. In other words, if somebody lived a total secular lifestyle and they drank and they had sex with women, they spent money by the gazillions and they centered their whole life choices around their own desires, that person has the potential of becoming bad because they never even considered being part of a higher power. But if you're,
let's just say you're aware of your shortcomings,
okay, go ahead. Don's on the air now, by the way. Go
I
ahead,
understand
Albert.
I agree with what you're saying, but I want to go back on what I was saying. And like I was saying, like, you know, if you're bad, you go to hell, and you're good, you go to heaven, you know? And that's where you lose your free will. You believe in God, and you want, and when you die, you want to go to a good place when you die, you know? You don't want to go to hell, you know? And you believe in God, and you say, oh, at least when I die, I'm going somewhere. And you know, I hear that, you know, they try to joke about atheists, like, oh, yeah, when you guys die, where are you guys going to go? You know, we believe in God, and because... Mm-hmm. You know, and so when we die, we know where we're going, you know. But there we go. That's free will. You lost your free will because if you believe that, you're kind of forcing yourself.
But even
to say,
if you don't,
good.
Even
but
if I'm you
really,
don't join a church.
I just want to get this point across. Go ahead and finish.
But
okay.
You're missing
like,
part of what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. But I just want to get this point across, you know what I'm saying? What I'm trying to say is you lose your free will because you say you have to be good. You want to go to heaven. When you die, you want to go somewhere. So you got to do this. You have to do it. So you lost your free will there. And part of me, I am atheist because I give myself 100% free will on my own choice to do something good because I want to, not because I have to.
Okay, that makes sense, but I have one last question. Don, you're on the air, by the way. My last question is this. Whether you join a church or not, whether, let's say you've only been introduced briefly to Christianity early in your life, whether you choose to be in a church and participate, does that make you a good or bad person? And what I mean by that is you're saying that you have free will as long as you're not part of a religion. But do you have free will? Because most of life is meant for suffering. We have to, let's say you might not have cancer, but you might have some other kind of ailment, like an emotional problem or another type of issue. For example, I had a father who drank. So the Christians view the world as we're on earth for a short time, and there's a series of suffering. And the only redemption is in the next life. Now, in America, because we live in a food-rich country where we're not going hungry, it doesn't mean you're going to starve. You still can live a good life here and have a lot of fun and blessings. But the question is I believe whether you're a part of a church or not, you're still under the laws, the universal laws of God, whether you acknowledge it or not, and your free will is a choice that God gives you, but we're all subject to suffering. Don, do you agree with that? Go ahead, Albert.
Yeah,
you can finish your statement.
Yes,
well,
I do. Hello, everybody.
Yeah. Free will, at least in the mind, I mean, nobody has 100% free will. And even in your mind, mentally speaking, you might have probably like maybe 99% free will and 1% no free will. But physically, your free will is really cut by the government, police, your employer, you know, your boss, family, whatever, et cetera, et cetera. Your free will could be cut very short to maybe like 10% only free will and 90% no free will, you know, physically speaking. At least mentally, most of your free will is there.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. Don, your turn.
What about predestiny? I kind of believe that God already knows his plan. He already knows about what we're doing. It's kind of why I think the Bible, and this is my opinion, had revelations because it's telling you the future. So we are predestined to our future no matter what, according to the Bible. But
I do not believe in predestination, because exactly what Albert said about free will, we can freely choose or reject God. Now, I do believe in God's providence, that somebody has to expose us to the scripture in order for us to be converted. But I don't think God may know that Jane Hoffman was destined for hell or heaven ahead of time, but Jane Hoffman had a choice.
I don't know if that's the case, because whether Jane Hoffman makes a decision to go to class today and not go to class today could be the determining factor as to what God preordained, which could have been, if Jane Hoffman stayed away from class today, could have had
You're talking about my 12-step meeting?
No, I'm just giving it hypothetical.
Okay, Don, but listen to this. I'll tell you in terms of my addiction. I had a gambling addiction. I stopped. Then I went back. Then I stopped. So my choice is mine. If I want to continue to live in sin and live a carnal life, I can. If I want to go to church and do things in the community that edify and build up the Spirit of God, I can do that. It's a choice. But, like, for example, a woman in 1930 might have had less choices than me. She might have been subject to a husband who was very strict and ruled her life, you know. So my choices nowadays are pretty free, but my choices maybe 100 years ago may have not been.
Well, what if you were in that, you decided to skip school that day and stay at home and, you know, curl up with your favorite book and your teddy bear in your hand and your slippers and your nightgown, and then a tornado tears up your house or apartment. And, you know, and
what,
you,
the question is, that, is playing hooky going to kill me?
Is are you predestined to have stayed home that day, or, you know, did you have free will where you could have gone to school and that would have happened, where you would have been injured?
It's hard to say, but I do know one thing. Some people have died because of their actions.
Of course, a lot of people have. And that's what I'm saying, is that their actions can be good actions and they still die. You know, they're heroes or you know, people who save other people's lives in certain types of experiences or disasters. You know, and there are different things that people are led to do that they're meant to do. And that's where, you know, that's where we are predestined to have whatever consequence get done to us or have happened to us. And that's one of the things that I worry about. You know, you're talking about your free will. So, in other words, you're giving your life up to sin and you know, not even worrying about whether you want to go to heaven or hell or wherever you think you might be going. That doesn't sound right.
I want to kind of like go on that statement on some people die because of their actions. Now, I want to try to say that if you're going to commit suicide, then you could die because of your actions on suicide. But if you're not committing suicide and you cannot predict the future, and you died because you did something that you have no idea that was going to be the future, then, you know, it could not have been the fault of the person, you know, that died. You know what I mean? Because in most cases, it's the fault of the other person. They killed that person or poisoned them or, you know, or gave them something without even looking at the food or whatever, wherever the case might be, or ran them over, you know what I mean? And, you know, or, you know, in some case, it might be 50-50%, maybe the other person, or, you know, because he wasn't paying attention.
Now, you're talking about two different things. You're talking about one, a potential homicide or euthanasia, and the other is suicide. Those are two different, totally
exactly. But I'm saying, is that if you can't predict the future and you don't want to die, let's just say you do not want to die, but you cannot predict the future, so you do everything that you can to stay alive, even though you cannot predict the future and you die, then you can't, it can't be your fault.
But you, okay, but that's what I'm saying. It's divine intervention. You were meant to die. If you know, if you're looking at it, predestiny or God's plan or whatever you want to call it. You know, this is an age old question that will never be answered. So
here's the thing: then that you're meant to die. That this is meant to happen in you. The predestined future. Let's just say if you know the predestined future and you go around tell everybody exactly what their future is. If you tell somebody what their future is, they can change their mind, decide to do something else. Or even if you don't know what their future is and you guess, and you somehow guess correctly, and you just guess that somebody's future is going to be like that, and somehow it's correctly, right? But you just guess, right? And they just because you guessed that was their future, they decide to change their mind because you guessed their future for them, so they changed their mind and did something else instead. So then how is anything predestined?
I'm going to tell you that I was just letting you guys know I was trying to get a hold of Ben in the last few minutes.
Albert, that was what you were predestined to do. You were predestined to die. That's the whole point, is that if you go ahead and something happens and you die, that was when you were supposed to die.
Okay, Don, there's two ways of looking at this, and I'm going to just briefly tell you guys what I think. I'll just give you one example in my life. So I was living in Norfolk, Virginia in 1984, and I let a German woman who was agnostic, had hardly thought about God her whole life, I led her to the Lord. She ended up becoming one of the biggest Christians in the Norfolk area. She devoted her whole life to God. She served children. She served the church. She gave a lot of money. And now I can look at that experience and say I was predestined to go to Norfolk, Virginia, live next door to this woman, and become a vital witness to Christianity in her life. But then there's another kind of predestination. Like if Albert walks out of the street at 12:01 midnight, and a car barely misses him, and he almost got killed, and then he has some kind of epiphany. Like, some things, like, God has foreknowledge of everything we're going to do, but that doesn't mean that all God's going to carry out every awesome thing in our life and every negative thing. Like, God doesn't pre-plan somebody dying in a bike accident. It could be the biker's negligence to go out on a rainy night. You know, a lot of things involve human choice, and a lot of things involve God's providence. And I don't believe in predestination, because then people are going to get paranoid and walk around their whole life asking if this or that was meant to happen.
Well, here's another reason why I don't believe in predestiny, because if I wanted to, I can choose your predestiny if you're going to live tomorrow. I can go to your house and kill you right now. I can choose your predestiny to live or die, you know? I mean, simply because I have a gun right here. So I can choose, you know, I can choose my next-door neighbor's predestiny to live and die tomorrow if I so please, you know? And so how am I allowed to choose somebody else's predestined to, you know what I mean? Predestiny is just, you know, things you see in the movies.
First of all, we are all God in his likeness. So if we were meant to go out and kill somebody or neighbor or whatever, there might have been a predestination in God, that in the God in us, that we were supposed to do that. Many, many people are in jail, prisons, because God told them to do something. And that's part of the predestiny, and that's part of the lack of free will. Because somebody, you know, not a lot of people want to just go out and kill people. And so there are some, and maybe they are godless. But in terms of somebody hearing the voices and them telling them to go out and do something, that would be, in a way, predestined in that that person was meant to sacrifice themselves in some form or fashion. You know, this question is age old, and it's probably one of the biggest questions there is, and it'll never be answered in our lifetime anyway, probably. But, you know, if we're talking about death and suicide, that's one thing. And they could, you know, the Catholics believe in purgatory, and so you're looking at just sitting and waiting until God or whomever, the time determines when you're going to try again, or if you're going to go, you know, stay there forever. So, you know, you've got a lot of choices to make, but are those really your choices?
Well, the fact that you can change somebody else's predestiny as so
right.
as you please, maybe I can go to the next door neighbor, slash his
tires,
and get him into work tomorrow, and then get fired,
still,
and then I change his predestiny.
That's still their destiny. Whatever, where, however it happens, whatever happens, that is still your destiny. You can, it can be by somebody else's hands. It can be random. It can be natural causes. It can be, you know, active nature. Anything that would be considered predestination. You had a predestination to have done whatever you did, your brain waves, the way that you act, the temperament, attitude, those are all part of the decisions of free will. However, how they got those determinations was not necessarily free will. So, you know, that's what I am saying. I don't know if it's the truth or not.
Well, nobody can prove it wrong or right. There's no way to prove it or to field test it, because we don't have a time traveling machine. So, you know, it's just a figure of speech, a thing that comes out in the movies, but nobody knows for sure.
I agree with Albert. I think what Albert's trying to say is it's not a human-to-human thing. Like, Don can't know what Albert's destiny is. But, Albert, I think you're looking at it from a human point of view. Don's saying that God is omniscient and he knows everything. So, people don't want to feel like they're locked into something.
Well, see, wait, here's the thing. Let me go back. Don doesn't know what my destiny is, but he can change my destiny. He can come over to my house and change my destiny. Yeah, it's just so easy to change somebody else's destiny as long as you know where they're at and you can reach them. Or even,
well,
even
you
if
can't
you know
change.
The
only way
contact,
you can change someone's destiny is if you kill them. But I changed the destiny of that gentleman.
You could change somebody's destiny simply by sending him text messages on the phone and give him ideas in his head, and maybe some of those might work.
Well, you changed the destiny
okay.
of your neighbor in Norfolk.
I did. I'm not saying we can change people's destinies, but what I think what Albert's frustrated with you about is that when you say everything's predestined, Albert's looking at it from the point of view that he's locked into a certain existence and he can't change the outcome. No one would be happy about not being able to change the outcome of their life.
Well, that's hope.
Okay.
But that's where the argument from this argument stems from, free choice. Free choice is the hope that people have in saying that they control their lives. But if it's not real, which in some ways I don't know if it is, I think that, if you know, like Revelations, it's all, the end is already written. So what we're looking at is living as good Christian or whatever spiritual ideology.
Well, here's the thing. If everything is predestined, then you have no free choice. You have 0% free choice if everything is predestined. You don't have a choice. It's just going to happen. It's going to happen tomorrow. You know, let's just say you're going to get run over tomorrow. There's nothing you could do about it. It's predestined, so you have no choice. You have no free will whatsoever. It just happens.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
That's why I say that things are not predestined. That you have to have free choice and free will.
But is that free will already predetermined?
Well, if that free will is predetermined, then you have no free will.
Okay.
Okay. I think we should talk about an example, okay? So I can think of two examples. One is from one of our co-hosts, but I'm not going to reveal the source. I'll obscure it enough. So let's say at 20 years old, Ben Frankenstein, and I'm not talking about the Ben on the show, Ben Frankenstein, he's frustrated with college, so he starts drinking, and his drinking habit gets worse and worse until the end of college. Then he takes a blue-collar job that he doesn't even want, but he's just doing it to help out his family. And his alcoholism becomes worse, and all of a sudden one night on a dark road in Esco, Minnesota, he kills somebody. Then he goes to prison for manslaughter for 10 years. While he's in prison, he gets saved, and then when he gets out, he gets a decent job through a friend and becomes a church leader in his church. Did that man have choices along the way that involved predestination? Hello?
Yes.
I'm just trying to, like, do a scenario. Yeah. Like, I'll tell you a story that this lady told me about 5 years ago. She told me she used to be in the Army, and there was a dental student. He was, like, in a good program in the Army. Like, he was either finishing up dentistry school or had already finished. He was jogging one day, and a big truck rig drove by, and something happened where he crossed the street too soon, and he ran across the street, and his body got wedged in the truck, and he got beheaded, and he died. Now, this person had a life of promise. He already had a good career, and boom, he was iced off the planet. He was iced off the planet. So was that person, was God disappointed with that person, or was it just a freak of nature?
It was his destiny to not have finished whatever he was finished or whatever he thought he had to finish in his life. It happened. He didn't have a choice, and he just ate it. He got wedged, decapitated, and now he's in heaven. He's happier than you are. He's happier than you are, and you know, and that's saying.
I'm happy.
Okay, we're happy, but I bet you.
I don't have sex, but I'm happy.
He bet you he has more sex, and he's happier in heaven than you are down here.
There's no sex in heaven. We don't have those kind of desires.
Right.
Here's the question: what about the free will of babies? They're, you know, abortion. You know, you have an abortion, and the baby's dead now. So did that baby have free will? Did he ever have free will?
No. Nope.
Even in his home?
The mother
chose
to kill it.
See, that's a questionable thing, because the baby, once it's formed, once it is inseminated, at some point the baby is cognitive. And if it's up to 3 months, or so, that baby at that last couple
days. The baby is
days.
Not cognitive. Don, the baby was in the mother's womb at 12 weeks. It looks like a little embryo. My twin sister believes that those babies will be in heaven, all the aborted fetuses.
They probably will be. The babies could have had a knowledge, not necessarily free will, but just a consciousness. And that's, you know, that's what the abortionists, anti-abortionists argue as part of their argument.
Yeah, when do you develop
right.
the conscious mind, you know? And at what point do you develop a conscious mind? And at what point are you, how you say, you're making a choice, like making a choice to kick your leg, you know what I mean? Kick your mom's stomach, you know, or something like that, you know?
Well, even if the kid doesn't have a consciousness, I believe that God knows that child exists in the mom's stomach, and if God wants to redeem that baby into heaven, God will, whether the baby can conceive of a conscious or not.
Well,
yes,
when the baby's
life was predestined.
They show the baby. They show what? The baby has. They show babies have movement or voice recognition or voice at least, and the music at that age.
Here's the thing about the about the predestined you're talking about, to for a mother or somebody else to choose the predestined future of a fetus or a baby that still hasn't even. Maybe let's just say maybe still hasn't even developed consciousness, and you have the power to you don't have the power, you just or to predestine somebody else's predestiny, you know, a baby's predestiny. I mean, you know what I mean, to have an adult to have the choice to predestine the future of a baby or a fetus. I mean, that's just the predestiny right there. It's just all flawed.
I'm thinking of two examples. I got pregnant in 1986 by a guy that I shouldn't have been pregnant by because I was in a committed relationship. And I decided to have the child anyway because I loved him. But I lost the baby at 26 weeks. So God knows that I wanted that child to have a full life. You know what I mean? But the baby was taken from me at 26 weeks. It was a miscarriage. But because it weighed over a pound, it was considered a stillborn. So do you guys think, not just for my own personal sake, but I believe that baby will be in heaven because I willed it to live, and even though the baby died, like, I was just reading about Joseph Smith tonight. His wife had three children. They all died within 2 to 4 days. Their first three children died within 2 to 4 days of the birth, and those babies should be in heaven, and so should my 26-week-old baby. Don't you think?
So
if
here's
you believe
the thing.
In heaven.
I can decide. Wait. So I can decide, say, hey, I want that baby to go to heaven. So I'm going to kill it right now so the baby can go to heaven. Because if the baby grows up in this shitty family, he's going to go to hell because his dad and mom is going to raise him to be a bad person. He's going to go to hell. So I'm going to kill that baby before his dad and mom give him evil ideas so he can go to heaven. Does that sound right?
Well, you can answer what's wrong with that philosophy, because I didn't
right.
kill the kid. She died in my stomach.
No, but let's just say somebody like that thinks like
wait,
that.
Wait, Albert. You are right about one thing, though. Okay, I'll tell you what you're right about, because I was going to bring this up next. In the old days in Ireland, if a teenager got pregnant, she was sent away to get give the kid up to adoption. Why? Because she sinned and she had premarital sex. So sometimes people know if a child's going to be born into a family like where alcoholism is present, and maybe that kid will have less of a chance. But throughout history, Babe Ruth was an orphan. There's been a number of people who grew up in terrible circumstances, including Dick Gregory, who we talked about 2 months ago. He grew up in he didn't grow up in terrible circumstances, but he grew up in abject poverty, and he found his way out. But even if you know the kid's going to look at people grew up in Calcutta, India, and in places in South America where there was no clean water, but women still continue to have children, even in areas where the environment's contaminated. So there's all kinds of conditions, but you cannot kill a child ahead of time. That's murder.
Well, let me go back on what I was saying. Let me go back. Okay. So let's just say, well, they say, right, the apple does not fall far from the tree. So, you know, that says the apple doesn't fall far from the tree means that if you have a really evil and bad mom and dad, then the baby is most likely going to grow up to be evil, right? If your mom and dad is a KKK member and they freaking hate black people and they're like super bad, right? Their mom and dad, this is the mom and dad, and they raised a child to hate black guys, you know? And let's just say the mom and dad friends that they hang out with also are KKK members, and they also hate black people. Well, you know, that child is going to be raised in a family with family and friends. They all think alike and the same. And like they say, the apple doesn't fall from the tree. So that means they grow up probably to be evil and do bad things. And it's going to do a lot of bad things. And, you know, and like they say, if you're a bad person, you're going to go to hell. So, and if you kill the baby before he's raised by a bad family, then he's going to go to heaven. So you just chose the predestination.
Okay,
say,
but you know what?
And go to heaven, or you can grow up with this family and go to hell.
People change, you know, like, for example, I work in an elementary school. Some kids come to school with dirty pants. There's holes in their pants. They have high water pants. They have shirts that don't fit. I work with one kid where he said he never gets a decent breakfast, so I bring him snacks every day. I mean, who's to determine who's good and evil, or if an alcoholic who drinks for 10 years one day decides to stop? I mean, there's no regulation in a free country like us over who has kids and who doesn't.
Well, here's the thing. Let me talk to you about the apple doesn't fall from the tree in a different point of view. If you go to Africa and you go in the middle of the jungle where the people live in the middle of the jungle in Africa, and you talk to the headhunters and they shrink people's heads, and you say, you know, like, aren't you bothered with those shrunken heads right there on your desktop? They're like, no, my brother has 10, you know? And so, you know, and it's, let's just say in a culture like that, cutting off people's heads and shrinking them could be perfectly fine and okay because that's the culture they're raised and born with, you know? And, you know, if you think you could just change somebody and grab that guy that all his life was raised around that culture in the jungle, cutting people's heads and shrinking them, and you try to bring him to America and change his whole life, you know, in some cases, it's just not going to happen because his whole life and culture was that way that he's used to. His loving family, the family that he loves is raised that way. And, of course, he's going to go with his family that he loves. He's going to choose what they choose, you know, in most cases.
In some Muslim cultures, a woman is stoned to death if she commits adultery or premarital sex. So when those people come to a freer country, they have to learn to adapt to the ways. Like, we could spend the whole night on different potential scenarios, but Don, it's getting towards midnight here in Minnesota, you guys, and I kind of only want the show to last 15 more minutes because I'm at work. Do you guys have a problem with that?
No, I don't have a problem at all. I'm so beat that if we stop at 10, I'm good.
Okay, so Albert, I want to know what your overall message is tonight. Like, being that you're from the outside of traditional religion, how do you view the world? Do you view the world as a series of progressions where we have to better ourselves through intellect and education and position in life? Or do you view the world as kind of a cosmic thing where anything could happen, good or bad? Or just tell me what your world philosophy is. I'd like to know it.
Well, as a non-religious person, you know, as a free mind that I am, because I don't believe in any religion, so I'm free-minded to choose and believe, you know, in natural things. And I believe that, you know, the things that happen are all in combination with other things that happen. Because the things that happen to you, let's just say your life is based on everything else that happened. Like if your mom and dad would have won the lottery before you were born, and then you were born, you know what I mean? Your life is going to be completely different. Now, even as you go in life, you know, whatever text messages you get on your phone, whatever emails you get on your internet, whatever happens to you, it's all a part of your life, which changes you and develops you in your life. So as you're developing, and every day, every year, no matter what, no matter how old you are, you're still going to be developing everything and processing everything you see, you hear, you smell, you touch, everything. So everything that has contact with you in any way or any shape or form that has contact with you is going to have an impact on how you make your decisions, and your decisions that are somewhat based on somewhat of a free will, not completely, but, you know, most of it's free will, but, you know, but everything that impacts your life has a way of what you choose. Because obviously, if you were born by yourself and never saw any other human being in your life, you know, your choices will be completely different. So, yes, you know, the choices that you make are compacted with everybody else around you. So, you know, we all have...
I guess I have one comment on what you said. Michael J. Fox, who used to be on a good TV show, he was throttled with Parkinson's at a young age where, you know, your body moves around. And he's been plagued with that condition his whole life. But he tried to turn it into something bigger and better. Like, you know, he's donated to charities. He's been the spokesman for that illness. He hasn't complained. And then Christopher Reeve, who fell off a horse and ended up dying, and he became a quadriplegic. Like, even people where bad things happen, you know, even Christopher Reeve was even able to act in a full-length movie after that. So, I mean, not everybody, even if they suffer and have bad things happen to them, they still turn it around. You know what I mean?
Well,
so,
you are who you are based on your memories. Because if I was to delete all your memories, and you have no memories anymore, you will be a completely different person. So you are who you are based on your memories.
Right. And I'm just saying that I've seen people who, you know, everybody has struggles, right? But we've all been able to conquer things. Sometimes we don't conquer. Sometimes we do fail. But I was looking at Michael Fox's website. He has 4 grown children now and a beautiful wife who stood by him. And sometimes things turn out for the good, even though they start out bad. So, Don, do you have any conclusion?
Yeah, those guys are predestined to have Parkinson's and Christopher Reeve fall off the horse. Anyway, I just
But even so, I mean, they still manifested goodness in the world.
That's because they're not dead. They're not fish. They're
Christopher Reeve is dead. Christopher
dead. I mean, during the time of his malady, during the time that he was alive from the horse fall to his death, he was still cognizant. He still fought and wanted to help. You know, the thing about this this last hour is that we're all winners. We're all right, and you know, Joseph Smith, we found out he's a racist, and he's leading the people down through racist.
He was a racist by misinterpreting the Bible.
Yeah, well, everybody misinterprets the Bible. That's why it's the Bible. That's why it's the most well-read book there ever has been, because you have the controversy. Yeah, but what was it? Basically, we are all right. We're all winners. And it's time to go home.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to end the show by saying that God's providence is promulgated by our desire to seek God, and there are relevant scriptures in the New Testament and the Old Testament that will reveal the character of God. So whether you're a conformist or you don't want to be part of a regular church, you still have the choice to pursue a higher spiritual destiny. And if religion isn't your bag, then there's other things out there like the Tao and Asian culture and Asian cool religion, you know, that talks about letting go and a higher sense of being. And it's available to all, and it's not conditional, and it's not oppressive. So with that, I'm going to end the show with one of John's songs, and I'll be in touch, okay?
Thank you very much, James.
I just wanted to mention one thing on a lighter note before we hang up. Michael Rapaport, an actor who was in Beautiful Girls in Boston Public, 2-minute rant on Donald Trump in the last 24 hours because Trump was complaining about the NFL. And Michael Rapaport swore at Trump in the rant and said, no one cares what you think. And he also made some fat jokes, calling Trump loaded and some other stuff.
Today was historic, so when you got the entire...
Why was it historic?
You had the entire NFL, even Villanueva, who came out by himself for Pittsburgh, came out with an explanation that he was doing it because he was a member of the armed forces and believed that the flag was that important. Otherwise, he probably would have stayed back. The whole Pittsburgh team didn't come out. Neither did the Titans, you know, Tennessee Titans. So we're looking at the fact
Are
that
you
this
serious?
No, everybody's interlocking arms, including the owners and the coaches. And so we're looking at the potentiality of this start of a huge movement, anti-Trump movement. And that's not the way I wanted to see it, but it's predestined, guys. There you go.
The only reason I left it is I had it as a tag already, and I've liked Michael Rapaport as an actor since the early 90s. He filmed a movie in Minnesota. And I'm familiar with him. I liked his rant, even though I don't think he should have made the fat innuendos against Trump. Just because people complain about Trump being tacky and being a bully, there's a way you can get your opinion across without name-calling. So with that, we can discuss the football thing next week. But thanks for joining us, and have a good night, you guys.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you, Zane. Good night.
I offer up myself to you, protected by your hand. My dreams and schemes and all I have surrendered to your plan. I know that I'm inadequate, I stumble and I fall, but still you always pick me up whenever I will call. We humbly bow before you. We love to praise and adore you. We humbly bow before the throne. We give you all the glory. Salvation is our story. We humbly bow before the throne. I offer up myself to you, protected by your hand. My dreams and schemes and all I have is surrendered to your plan. I know that I'm inadequate, I stumble and I fall, still you always pick me up whenever I will call. We humbly bow before you. We love to praise and adore you. We give you all the glory. Salvation is our story. We humbly bow before the throne. I need you by my side. Forgive me for my pride. Please hear my cry before the throne. Good night, you all. I suggest you read Isaiah 1, 2, and 3. There's a lot of providential wisdom in there, and it reveals the struggle of the Jews. Good night.